It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Bust and Loose Baseball, episode 108. We've got a lot to cover, including an injury to a key starting pitcher. C.J. Abrams is back and picking up where he left off. The Nats are stealing more bases than any other team. Joey Gallo has started the season better than we anticipated, and we will give you a minor league report as well. All coming up on Bust and Loose Baseball, starting right now.
Bust and Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
This is Bust and Loose Baseball, episode 108. First things first, please subscribe to the podcast. Please rate the podcast. Please review the podcast. We want to try to grow it. We want to keep our audience booming into the season and have more people listening each and every week than before. So please spread the word. Send a text to a buddy. Let them know we're doing this. If they're into the Nats, whether that's the majors, the minors, any part of the organization, please get them to start listening and rate and review this podcast to help us out a little bit. Alongside Toby Altizer, I'm Grant Paulson. Tobes, what's going on?
Yeah, it's good that we're finally in the full swing of baseball season, it feels like, Grant. The Nationals got their first series win against the Giants. Would have been nice for a sweep, but we'll take a series win. It's just good to be back kind of in the swing of things. Now it's kind of past opening day, and it's just it's the grind of baseball season, and you love it. You absolutely love it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. There's a lot to cover. So why don't we start with the big news for the Nationals of the last few days on the injury front, and it's not good. Josiah Gray to the injured list with what is being called forearm and elbow issues. Those are scary words for a starting pitcher. I don't want to make any bones about this. I mean, sometimes those can be precursor words, and that could be a precursor injury to ultimately needing surgery. And Tommy John, obviously, they have not said that there's any thought that that's going to happen. And in fact, the Nationals, for what it's worth, are saying the opposite. Although, while I love a lot of the things the Nationals do and people with the Nationals, telling the truth on injuries has never been one of their strengths. So I'll wait and see how this goes. But the report, at least on the broadcast from the Masson crew, was that Josiah Gray, according to the staff, is not expected to miss a serious amount of time, that they don't view this as something that will ultimately require any kind of serious recovery or lead to Tommy John, that they think the ligament's just fine and there's just some soreness. So it's an elbow. It's a forearm. Sounds maybe scarier than it is, hopefully. But I'll say this, Toby. I mean, if in fact you fast forward a month, he's back on the mound pitching injury and pain-free, and he's settling back in, throwing better than he had, maybe it's a blessing in disguise, because if you watched his first couple starts, it was bad. He was getting rocked. You know, he had 8 1/3 innings, ERA over 14, two of his worst starts maybe as a National, frankly, 15 hits and 13 runs in about 8 innings of work. You and I were both kind of nervous and worried about where this was going this season for JoJo, who just didn't look the same. And maybe we're finding out that something was wrong in his arm.
Yeah, I thought he looked sharp early in spring training, and then basically he got the nod that he was going to be the opening day starter, and then he kind of fell off a cliff. So maybe there was some fatigue or something happening in spring training, and it carried over into the regular season. But credit to JoJo, apparently he went to, you know, after his second start, he wasn't feeling as good, and then he went through a bullpen, and he reported that he was feeling some issues in that arm. And everything so far that the team has said was muscular and that the ligament's intact after they did a MRI and everything. So we're hoping that it's just something where he sticks on the IL for the 15 days, comes back, and kind of jumps back into the rotation, and we forget that he ever had an IL stint later on in the year. But, I mean, it is concerning, like you said, Grant, especially in this, really, this week of baseball where we've seen Shane Bieber go on the IL. You see all these prolific pitchers having to deal with Spencer Strider dealing with elbow issues. We've seen so many top dudes have to deal with elbow issues, and then you see Josiah Gray pop up with an elbow and forearm thing, and you immediately think the worst because so many guys have had that problem over the last couple of weeks and last couple of years. So hopefully everything's good, and if he's truly okay, which everything sounds like it is, and he just needs a little bit of rest, maybe it is sort of a reset that he needed because he has been really, really bad the first two starts, and he was set to make his third start in San Francisco. You would have hoped he could have bounced back. Now he gets a little bit of time maybe to reevaluate things, get some rest on that arm, and maybe go through, and we've talked about maybe trying to figure out a four-pitch mix as opposed to throwing seven pitches. I think it just gives him a chance to kind of reset, almost restart the year again when he comes back from the injured list if he's truly healthy.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, here's why this matters so much, right, is without trying to be disrespectful to a lot of the guys on the team, there are five or six guys, frankly, that matter a whole lot in the long term that are on the Nationals right now and who, you know, everything that they do, the results really, really matter. For the rest of the guys, tangentially, it's important because you'd prefer the team to win than lose, or, you know, with a guy like Gallo or you know, Jesse Winker, you're trying to add trade value with every one of their at-bats, right? But really, long-term in D.C., the most important players, I would say, are C.J. Abrams, K-Bert Ruiz. I would throw maybe Jake Irvin, Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore as a five, maybe Jacob Young and Lane Thomas, if you want to throw them in. Like, there's five to seven guys that really matter in the long term of this thing in terms of age and how long they're going to be here. Gray's one of those guys, or Lipscomb, I forgot, is another one in the key five for sure as a rookie starting at third. But I just circle back to that. So much of this year is about Gray taking another step, Gore making the leap to front of the rotation starter, Abrams hitting stardom, which seems to be happening, which we'll get to in a minute. And in Gray's case, you just don't want to get to a point where he's missing a couple of months or he's having to be shut down and you're going to miss a season of development. Then he's coming back and he's going to be on a restrictive innings and pitch limit as a 27-year-old. It would just be really damaging, and it would be a shame for the build here. So fingers are crossed for Josiah Gray. But as I said, if we find out he comes back, he's healthy, he pitches a lot better, that it wasn't just that he was stinking, but that he was struggling because he wasn't healthy, I think that's actually probably a great thing for him and a great thing for everybody else. Now, again, it was only two starts. It's not like it was a 14-start sample or something at the beginning of the year, which probably isn't worth worrying about. But the results, and frankly, just you got your eyeballs. You guys are watching these games. It didn't look a whole lot like last year did, certainly not the early part of the season for Josiah Gray.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it is something where – I mean, you don't want your pitchers to ever have physical problems, but maybe that could explain some of the struggles. And like I said, he can kind of just go back and reset, and hopefully he feels healthy. I mean, credit to Josiah Gray for at least being upfront and honest, because like you said, you don't want this guy to end up missing months and years of time because of a severe injury that maybe leads to Tommy John or something else. You'd rather this guy go ahead and get out ahead of it and, you know, take 15 days off. It sucks to not have him in the rotation, especially early in the year. But at the same point, I'll take him taking a 15-day leave of absence to make sure that he's fully okay, as opposed to him trying to gut it out and try to prove that he's a tough guy when he doesn't really need to and end up doing some long-term damage. So hopefully this is something that, you know, it's just that 15-day IL stint. He resets, gets back on track, and figures it out and looks like the JoJo that we saw in the first half of last year.
All right, let's talk C.J. Abrams. I just referenced that he is really coming to his own, looks like a superstar early this season. So Abrams was 10 for 26 going into play today, went 0 for 4 in the series finale in San Francisco. So now 10 for his last 30, hitting .333 over those seven games. Of course, there was a three-game sample in there where he didn't play, where he was hurt, he jammed his pinky, but he came back, and in his first game back had a big two-run home run to give the Nats the lead, had another run-scoring hit where he got jammed and kind of went the other way in a two-for-four performance. We have not seen him steal a base, interestingly enough, since that three-steal game, But he's sitting at 3 stolen bases to go along with now 3 home runs. I tweeted this. I'm at Grant H. Paulson. You can follow both of us, and you should follow both of us on X for Nats content. Toby is at Toby underscore Altizer with an I instead of a Y. Toby and then Altizer's Altizer. But Abrams, third home run of the season. How long did it take him to hit 3 home runs so far in his career? Well, if you go back to his rookie year in 2022, he played in 90 games and he didn't hit 3. He just had 2 for 90 games worth of baseball. Last year, it took him 39 games to hit his third home run. This year, he did it in his 8th game. The power is immense. I mean, he looks like he could hit over 20 home runs pretty easily. I mean, if you care about paces, it's probably way too early. He's on like a 40 homer pace. But I mean, to me, he looks like a guy who could hit 25 home runs. We know he can steal over 50 bags. He almost did that in a half a season last year, just about. This is what the dream was for Mike Rizzo and his staff, Toby, when they acquired Abrams as one of the centerpieces in the Soto deal. I think this is all happening at a really good clip, too. I mean, he's still only 23. And he's starting to flourish. I'm starting to get really excited and bullish about the possibilities here with Abrams, who's also been sterling defensively early this season.
I think it just shows how comfortable he is now that he's a big leaguer. I think that you're seeing the CJ Abrams that everybody expected to see, you know, back out in San Diego when he was a prospect. You're finally seeing that guy. He was kind of rushed through the minor league system, came up with San Diego. Things didn't necessarily work out right. He ends up here in Washington, and he's got to adjust. And through the first half of last year, he was still, I think, trying to establish himself and figure out his role. And he just didn't look all the way comfortable. And then you saw, once he got moved up to that leadoff spot, you saw C.J. Abrams. And what do I mean by you saw C.J. Abrams? He's swiping bags, he's hitting home runs and staring into the dugout and looks like the coolest dude on the baseball field. And we're seeing that again this year. I think he got comfortable in the second half last year, and I think you're starting to see that kind of just carry over. He's comfortable at the big league level now, and so I think that's when you start to see that superstardom shine. I mean, he's making great plays defensively. He's hitting long home runs. I mean, you look at the home run he hit on, what was that, Tuesday night in San Francisco, the ball doesn't fly in that yard too great generally, and he hits it to one of the deepest parts of the yard, no doubter. I mean, not many dudes can go out that far, and I've talked about it before. If you had the chance, which unfortunately Nationals fans don't get to because of the gate opening times, but if you had a chance to see C.J. Abrams take batting practice, you would think the dude weighs 40 more pounds and looks much bigger than he is, but he's just a lanky, tall shortstop that has a lot of power, and I think you saw that in San Francisco with that home run, and so the fact that he's already got 3 is really encouraging, but I think there's a lot more to come because he's not, I don't think with him, like, he's trying to hit home runs. I think he runs into them because he's got that much raw power, and we haven't seen him really explode on the base paths yet. And I mean, we're going to talk about a little bit more here in just a second, but he was going to be the catalyst. Everybody's stealing bags on this team, and you're getting Jacob Young stealing 3, Lane Thomas is stealing 3, people are taking off all over the place. And CJ's had 1 game, but he hasn't had a lot of games where he's done that. So I think it's really cool to see him kind of emerge. I think because of the fact that he's just that much more comfortable, you know, when we were down in spring training, all the guys down there, whether it was Davey, whether it was Mike Rizzo, whether it was just people around the team, were saying CJ's really increased his leadership this year. And it's maybe not something we'll ever notice, but that's something that just speaks to that comfort. Comfortability factor. And when you start getting comfortable and you start doing the things that he's doing and you see the swag that he plays with, I think it just shows that he's on the way up and the sky's the limit for this guy. I mean, before the season, I said 2060 in terms of 20 homers, 60 stolen bases. The 20 homers looks easily attainable at this point. We'll see with the stolen bags, but I'm just so excited to see what this guy can become.
Yeah, it's funny because you're a 3 steal game away, right? From being now on a crazy pace this early in the season. That's how it works. And he's got just 1 game where he's stolen a base. He actually got thrown out, oddly enough, as we do this podcast on Wednesday night yesterday in the game where he homered in at the 2 run scoring hits. And it was a bang bang play at the bag, but it was really a perfect throw. So not a whole lot you could say about that. The Nationals stole 2 more bases in their matinee today against the Giants. Again, we're taping after they just dropped the series finale 7-1. It was probably one of their most lackluster offensive games of the year. Just 1 run on 4 hits. But Drew Millis stole his first base. Minor league catcher, they called up as the third catcher, got a start, and then went right back down. Millis had a hit and a steal, so acquitted himself pretty well. And Jesse Winker stole his first base as well. I bring up the stolen bases because the Nationals are leading the major leagues right now with 25 swipes. They've also only been caught two times. So the number two team in baseball, the Reds, are 23 of 27. The Nats are 25 of 27. The Brewers are 19 of 21. They're the only team with over 15 steals that's been caught two or fewer times other than Washington. But there's only three teams in the sport with over 15 swipes, and the Nats have 25. And so them and the Reds are kind of running away right now, literally, figuratively, with the stolen base lead. And this has just never really been this ball club's MO. When Davey said in the spring, with me and Danny interviewing him at West Palm, you know, we're going to run a ton. I think people are going to be excited by our brand of baseball. I just dismissed that as words. Like, that's the kind of stuff managers say every year. Okay, sure, I've heard this before, Davey. I mean, they meant it. Like, when they get on, they are aggressive. They are not waiting. They are not wasting any time. I love the new rules in baseball. It's gotten really hard to throw guys out. Nats fans know that maybe better than anybody because K-Barrett Ruiz almost never does. But to go 25 of 27, and maybe the craziest part, which you alluded to earlier, they've had four different guys already with three steals this season. In a game, I'm saying. I didn't look this up, but I guarantee you that's a record for the fastest that's ever happened, largely because this era makes it possible. And prior to the rule changes a couple years ago, that just wasn't a thing. You could go, you know, 3 months as a team and maybe not steal 12 bags if you didn't run a lot. But so the guys that have done it, the roll call here, C.J. Abrams, Lane Thomas, Trey Lipscomb, and Jacob Young. Four different players have had three steal games. So I just love this, man. It's a blast to watch. I think this is really making this team a lot more interesting for me, to be completely honest.
Well, and I think this is smart because this is taking advantage of the rule changes that you saw last year that saw the uptick of stolen bases. It's taking advantage of that. I mean, this is a team that was going to lack power. They've hit, it seems like, a little bit more home runs than you've expected early on in the season, but it's not like they're in the top five in the league in home runs. So they were never going to be that team, and they're not going to be. That's not how they're constructed. But how they are constructed, even when Victor Robles is in the lineup over Jacob Young, he's kind of the same sort of player. You got Jacob Young who can steal bags. If Victor Robles is in there, Victor Robles can steal bags. Trey Lipscomb's a heady base runner. Obviously, we talked about C.J. Abrams. Lane Thomas has actually, I think, tracked faster than C.J. Abrams at times. So his ability to steal bags. Like, this team is going to be able to create havoc on the base path. So they're playing to their strengths and playing to the new rules. And I think it's just smart that they're doing that because you have to find a way to generate runs. And it wasn't going to be the long ball for this team. So find ways to turn a walk into a double, turn a routine bloop single into a double by stealing a bag, just creating havoc constantly. And it's something where I'm sure it's going to level out later on in the year, but I can already think of three instances this year, I think twice in one game, where the Nationals were picked off. It happened twice against the Phillies already this year where they were picked off first base and they were able to get to second base. The Nationals had it happen against them with Patrick Corbin on the mound. Like, just things like that where they're just being ultra aggressive. And then you had one where I think Luis Garcia was picked off and Trey Lipscomb was at third. And because the throw just didn't work out perfectly on the way home, then you ended up with this run scoring because they're aggressive on the base pass. That was one of the three steals for Trey Lipscomb. They have to find ways to make runs happen because, let's be honest, as much as we like some of the guys in the lineup, it's not like they have a juggernaut lineup like you're seeing with the O's or like you're seeing with the Dodgers. Like, they just don't have that. But what they do have is they have a lot of speed and a lot of young guys that can make it exciting. And like you said, I think it makes for a fun brand of baseball. And so this team is going to be fun to watch all year because, you know, this is just the start of the year. Can you imagine what it's going to be when they get some of these other guys into the fold that maybe even have more speed than a Jesse Winker or an Eddie Rosario and you bring up a James Wood or something like that? I think there's a lot of excitement, and I think it's very smart for this team to be playing that way.
Lane Thomas, 6-for-6. Trey Lipscomb, 4-for-4. Jacob Young, 4-for-4. I mentioned Abrams got thrown out yesterday, but 3-for-4 overall. Robles, before he got hurt, was 2-for-2 in a couple of games. And then they've got several guys. A lot of these guys with the one steal that aren't runners typically have been on the back end of double steals. But Gallo, Garcia, Millis, Nassim Nunez, who can fly, by the way, he actually was one of the two guys to get thrown out, oddly enough. He's a 70-plus runner. Ildemaro Vargas, Jesse Winker, all with a stolen base. So kudos to Davey. He's got the boys flying and running on the base paths. And you said something I think that's really smart I want to go back to, Toby, about – Like, what are you? What's your identity? You're not going to mash. You know, you're not going to hit a ton of home runs. Gallo has a chance, maybe. We can get into his power in a second, to be a guy that hits a ton of home runs. But really, there aren't other players on this team who will. You know, maybe Lane Thomas hits 25. He hit his first just a couple of nights ago. Maybe CJ hits 25. I would be still thrilled with 20 to 23, something like that, after his quick start. He's pacing a little ahead of that at this point. But you know what they actually remind me of? I was thinking about this. Is last year at the beginning of the season, the Diamondbacks were just running like crazy and nobody was able to throw them out. And they would get on and they'd steal bases. They weren't a very good offense. They didn't have stars. It wasn't like there was a bunch of power, but they were hitting, they were scoring. And I kind of get those vibes where it was clear to me. I remember actually talking last year to Torrey Lovello, the manager, about that and about like the philosophy. And he's like, yeah, we know we're short on these things, and this is how we're going to try to game the system. Well, we saw the rules. We built our roster around the new rules. And I don't necessarily know that the Nats went all in on that, but I think they probably wised up this offseason and said, okay, where can we cut some corners a little bit? And I think this is an area. If you were the Dodgers, who have a big league high 20 home runs right now, they only have six steals. You don't have to run. If you're the Astros, who have 18 bombs, or the Diamondbacks now this year have 15 home runs and just eight steals, like you adjust accordingly. But right now, the Nationals, they know what they are and what they're not, and they're not just going to outslug you. So let's build some offense and create and manufacture some scoring.
Well, and I think it's more than even just stealing bags. I think it's being aggressive and trying to take that extra base. We saw it in the first hit of the year, in the first game of the year, where Jesse Winker had a routine single to right field, and he tried to make it into a double. He gets thrown out at second. They ask Davey about it after the game. He said, oh, I have no problem. We're trying to make action on the base pass. We're trying to go get that extra 90 feet. And so I think you're going to see some dudes get thrown out on the base pass. You're going to see it happen. But in turn, you're also going to see dudes make outfielders have to make throws. You're going to see guys have to make plays. And if they make a perfect play, they'll get the guy out. Like you mentioned with CJ Abrams, like you'll take that steal any day. Perfect throw, nails him. Fine. You'll live with it. But the Nationals have to be aggressive on the base paths, trying to get that extra 90 feet, also trying to steal bags. Like, I think the Nationals are going to play super aggressively on the base paths. It'll lead to some frustrating outs, I'm sure, and it's going to lead to some headaches at times, but I think it's also going to lead to an exciting brand of baseball where sometimes it's just going to look like utter chaos on the base paths. But if it's that way for the defense, I think that's in favor of the Nationals with a team that just wants to take off and run all game long.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Long gone!
One guy who's not going to do a lot of running at this point of his career, but it's kind of the opposite of how the team's building what we're talking about, is Joey Gallo, who homered again. The lone highlight of the Wednesday afternoon game in San Fran was the 30-year-old smashing his third home run. I didn't even think he'd be in the lineup, by the way. He took a pitch up off the wrist hand late in the game on Tuesday night, and I was quite sure with a day game the following day, you sit him out and let him, you know, get over the bruise or whatever he was dealing with. But he was in the lineup, and he went deep. So that's three home runs now in about 35, maybe 40 at-bats for him. Looking it up now, 39 ABs, 7 for 39 on the year, hitting about 180. So this is kind of what Joey Gallo is, people. Here's the experience. He's hitting 180, crazily. He's not going to hit a lot higher than that, believe it or not. He's getting on base at about a 320 clip, and his OPS is over 800 because he's driving the baseball. But I bring him up because, you know, it's a tiny sample. Way too early to start looking at paces, to be frank. But he is on pace for 40 home runs. And you know, you go back to like some of the times that they've tried to do whatever this is, where they bring in a masher, a guy that has power. They hope they can have him hit a bunch of home runs so they can flip him for something on a one-year friendly contract for a team. Nelson Cruz or some of the other examples. And they didn't get off to particularly good starts. Gallo has. Again, he's hitting 179. But my point is, the whole point of him is to hit home runs. So if he could hit 15, 18, 20 home runs, you know, going into the All-Star break or the deadline or whatever it is, like that's now a tradable commodity. So he was either going to start the year in a way where he was hitting the ball out of the park or he wasn't. And after a terrible spring where he had a 100 average and very little power shown, he is hitting the ball over the fence, which is all you can ask for.
Yeah, I mean, he started slow in Cincinnati, and really over the last week, he hit his first home run on April 3rd. The last week, he's really put together good at-bats, whether it's doubles in the gap or obviously hitting the ball out of the yard. And I think the other thing, too, if you're talking about trade value, is I think he's played a really good defensive first base. He's helped guys out a lot. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, because if he keeps up this pace, I think a team would be willing to bring in a Joey Gallo, because I don't know how much of the outfield he's going to play for the Nationals, but you know, theoretically, you get to the deadline and you got a team that says they want a guy coming off the bench that's got a lot of power, or they want a guy that they can hit lower on in the order that they can play in the corner outfields, and they know they're going to get good defense or play him at first base. I think with some of his versatility defensively and just anytime he's at the plate, he could go yard, and not just off of righties. I think he's looked pretty good against lefties so far this year as well, at least over the last week. So it'll be interesting to see. It's still early, but it's always nice to see Joey Gallo mashing the baseball, because that thing, whenever he makes contact, it just feels like it's going to go a mile.
Quick shout out. One other National I wanted to call attention to is Luis Garcia, who's 10 for his first 31 at the plate, hitting over 320 to start the year. His OPS is over 825. Again, very, very early, but I've beat up on him a bunch on this pod. We've talked a lot about being ready to move on. He's getting one last crack at this situation. And look, if he was like 3 for 30 right now, maybe when you bring Nick Senzel back up, you kick Lipscomb over to second and Luis Garcia is out of the org, or you're to the bench, or you're figuring something else out. But he's hit so well that he's not moving off of second. We can get into the Senzel quandary here in a moment. But with his back against the wall and the team quite literally telling him, words verbally or otherwise, like it's now or it's never, good for him to start the way that he has.
Yeah, he has been fantastic. I think the at-bats he's put together, going the other way, hitting the ball gap to gap. I think when he's not trying to do too much, you see that natural ability. And again, why it's so frustrating at times that he can't be more consistent, because you see his bat-to-ball skills. You see how talented he can be. And so it's just about consistency with him. It's great that he's gotten off to a good start, but we've seen stretches like this from him before. We're going to have to see this continue on a day-in, day-out basis, and consistent approaches day-in, day-out, and consistent defense as well. To me, it's never been an ability thing with Luis Garcia. It's been in his head, whether it was focusing, whether it was not taking the job seriously enough. So he's been good to start. Love to see it, and he's taking advantage of his opportunity. He's going to have to keep doing that, though, because there's still dudes knocking at the door. One of them's over at third base in Trey Lipscomb. So we'll see, but good start for Louis.
Yeah, definitely. All right, before we dabble down to the minor leagues, Nick Senzel is in the minors rehabbing right now. He is 4 for 5 at the plate over two games, just a calm 800 average over the couple of days. He looks like he could be ready very soon. Broke a bone in his hand. They said it wouldn't be long before he was able to play again, and that's certainly been the case now for the 28-year-old who they signed to be the third baseman. I'm really curious to see what happens here, and this is something maybe we can put a pin in to talk a lot more about, because I think it's a much longer conversation, maybe on our next pod early next week as he's getting ready to come off the injured list. But what do you do? I mean, Senzel got hurt right before opening day. He is going to get a crack again at the big league roster. You're going to call him back up and presumably start him at third. It's not like Trey Lipscomb has destroyed the big leagues. He's hitting about 230. However, he's been plenty good enough to stay and looks like he belongs. You know, if anything, I would say defensively, where he's settled in a little more, and over the last few days, the throws have been much more consistent. But for a Gold Glover in the minors last year, Toby, you know, that's kind of been a little bit more of a wild card early on in that first homestand. He was throwing the ball all over the place. But do you send him down to AAA, no harm, no foul, and just say, all right, thanks for filling in, and bring Senzel back up for a short time? Senzel's such a placeholding seat warmer, that would be frustrating to me, the way Lipscomb has shown that he has good at-bats, and he came up with the big sack fly, going the opposite way yesterday. He just looks like a big leaguer already. Something that I think is going to be really, really captivating, and it's going to tell us a lot about the way they view the early part of this season here in the coming days.
Yeah, it's a tough decision. I mean, this is what we spent extensive time talking about when they were making the initial opening day roster, and they made their decision, but they were able to kind of get the best of both worlds and get to see Trey Lipscomb early on because of the injury. Now you're kind of in this quandary where I wonder if they thought the injury might last a little bit longer, if they would have just kind of gone with another option, or if they were just going to give Lipscomb this chance here either way. But I don't know what you do. I mean, it seems like with Nunez, you're going to keep him around because that was an option. And Luis Garcia, like you said, has played well enough that you're not going to move on from him. So I have no idea. I think maybe it's just as simple as you swap spots with Senzel and with Trey Lipscomb, but it's kind of tough when it's not like Trey has been fantastic, but he also hasn't been horrible. And I think it's one of those things where if you want to freak out because he had two throwing errors, go ahead, be my guest. But it's also a thing where he looked uncomfortable. It just looked like he was still kind of getting in. Now he's kind of settled in. He looks like he's more of the guy that, you know, you heard a lot about defensively. And it's still, you know, work in progress at the plate, but it's also not like Nick Senzel is going to come up and hit 320 and 40 bombs. So it's just kind of tough.
Yeah, he's also, as we talked about, he's also stolen, talking about Lipscomb now, four bases, which is a big part of their identity, and it's something he can do and will do on the base paths. There's also such a thing, and this will just sound like I'm being a homer for Lipscomb, but I think if you've watched him, you'd agree with me probably. Like, I feel good when he's at the plate. It's a lot of loud contact. You know, it's a lot of hard contact. It's not like he's overmatched. He's rarely having bad at-bats where he's swinging over pitches that he shouldn't in the other batter's box or something. Like right now, this moment, if the bases are loaded and the game's on the line and he's coming to the plate, despite the fact that he's hitting 230, I feel pretty good about that. Like he barrels a lot of baseballs. And so that having been said, you know, if you dive into some of the early season advanced numbers, that they're not great in terms of chase percentage, sweet spot, hard hit, barrel, some of those things. It's probably too early to start looking a whole lot into all of those advanced analytics. But my guess is they'll probably put him at Rochester with James Wood. You know, they'll send him down, and then they'll bring Senzel back up. Some people will moan about it, but they are at a point right now where, you know, if they don't have to, I don't think they're going to burn service time necessarily.
See you later.
Speaking of the minor leagues and their prospects, let's give you a quick minor league report here on Bustin' Loose Baseball. We will start with the Rochester Red Wings. So Wednesday night as we tape this. Tonight, all the days run together, Toby. James Wood went 2-for-3, scored 2 runs, drove in a run, walked 2 times. So notably, he was on base 4 times in 5 plate appearances. And here's what's most important about tonight that I just found so flabbergasting. James Wood had a base hit that went 115.3 miles per hour off the bat. 115.3. That is the hardest hit ball in the minors this year. That is a harder hit ball than any baseball off of a bat of a national since Juan Soto went 116 in 2021, 3 years ago. The Nats did not have a player hit a ball over 112.5 last year. Stone Garrett and C.J. Abrams both tying for the team 2023 record at 112.5. Again, his was 115.3, which sounds like it's close, but it's really not at all. And Wood is now, at that time, after those two hits, hitting over 400. He was retired after that, so his average dropped to a paltry 393 on the year in AAA here. In the early going of the season. But I just can't stress enough, like, that exit velocity number is really important. That is a skill that tells you a lot about a guy's strength, his hands, his wrists, his bat speed. You know, there are, I don't know, 10 guys in the major leagues at most, maybe, and I'm stretching to get to 10, that can do that. And I just mean ever, like, that have the ability to hit a ball 115. Giancarlo Stanton, O'Neill Cruz, Ellie De La Cruz, maybe Aaron Judge, Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton. I think I mentioned Vladdy Jr., Shohei Ohtani. Like, We're talking about those types of guys. I don't know, man. Are there 10? Like 115.3. Soto's on that list. It is, that is mind-blowing, and God, does it excite me about James Wood.
And it's also a different 115 because it's not like he's trying to hit 115. Some dudes just try to jack it, and you know if they make contact, it's different. But the guys that you mentioned, like a Shohei Ohtani, has an effortless swing. Like some of these guys have effortless swings and just launch baseballs. That's James Wood. It's effortless. He doesn't have to try because of his size, his ability. He just absolutely, when he connects, just demolishes the baseball. And, I mean, he's picked up right where he left off in spring training, and this is also encouraging, too, because, you know, he goes from spring training to AAA, and, you know, we talked about this before the season when he could get called up, and I was like, well, you know, if he keeps going, then it's got to be soon, you would think, and you kind of hope. But they also had a long layoff, Grant, where it was like they played a game and then they had four straight days where they were weathered out, and that could lead to a slump. That could lead to James Wood maybe losing his timing a little bit. Nope. Right back in the swing of things, drilling baseballs all over the place, being the player that was the best player for the Nats in spring training. And so I don't know how much analysis this is, but we're watching here on Wednesday night as we record Jackson Holliday make his debut up in Baltimore. Man, it'd be fun if James Wood was at Nats Park here soon, because that would even bring another excitement to the Nationals on top of everything that's going on. I think James Wood hype around Nats Park would be a lot of fun to experience. And if he keeps doing it, I mean, I don't know how you keep holding it down, because if it's Eddie Rosario holding a spot, Eddie hasn't been great. If it's Jesse Winker, you can move on from these guys. Like, there's a spot that could be open if they wanted to. I don't know that it's going to be anytime soon, but I would love it to be.
Yeah, we're getting closer for sure. And there's no rush necessarily, but I think as of a couple of weeks from now, you know, they're going to start having those internal conversations pretty consistently, day in and day out. All right, when's the time? You plan it for a homestand to get a bunch of folks in the ballpark, obviously, and you start to see when the stars align, perhaps. One thing I would say, though, that we haven't talked about with James Wood, beyond just hitting, you know, 380 now on the season, and beyond the fact that he hit a ball 115 today, exit velocity. He has not homered yet this year, but a ton of doubles in the early going of the season. And maybe the most important thing, this is what I cared the most about for him this season. We know he's got the power. We know he can hit for some average. Like, we've seen a little bit of everything. I needed him to cut down on the strikeouts. He was able to do that in spring training. So far this season, it's been 8 games. It's been about 30 at-bats and just 6 strikeouts for him. The 20% threshold is right where I would say that's better than even where he needs to be. But last year, he was up over, you know, 35% at points in the minor leagues. To be down to striking out about 20% of the time, he went 3 games in a row this week without a strikeout when they got back from those several rain days. He didn't do that once in the minor league year last year, not one time. Thought that was a good sign. He's got, I think, 1 strikeout only in his last 4 games. He struck out a few times in his first game. Since then, it's been a lot of contact. But 9 walks and 6 Ks, I think I'm more excited about that than him hitting 380, you know, than him having a 1078 ops, than 5 doubles in less than 30 at-bats. Like, the strikeouts, the contact rate, the stuff that he's really cut down on and improved upon that was important, that's where I'm just elated.
Yeah, and he's gone up a level. He didn't play in AAA last year. He's playing in AAA here. It's only been a couple of games, but I think it's important to note that he's gone up a level, and he's been better than he was last year at times. Again, still early sample size, but just to see that carry over and to see him continue to do these things. I mean, the strikeouts being down, the ridiculous exit velo that you're seeing from him. I mean, he's got the makings of someone that you can build a franchise around. So hopefully they can continue to develop him, and hopefully we see him at Nats Park soon.
Down to double A, Robert Hassel, slow start to the year, 1-for-4 with a couple runs tonight. Also drew a walk. He's hitting 200. Dylan Cruz got off to the really bad start where he was 0 for his first 11, but had a monster game with 4 hits and a home run on Tuesday. What's funny is, I mean, it's just so early in the year. To look at anybody's numbers is a futile exercise and silly, because, like, he had the 4-hit game and he was up to hitting 280, and then he has an 0-for-3 tonight with a couple strikeouts, and he's back to hitting 238, right? But Still, you know, more strikeouts than certainly you'd like a couple more Ks for him today. But I think that that four-hit game with a home run, which is on a breaking ball, big-time power low in the zone to be able to get that thing out to center field, like that's a flash moment where you can kind of see what has been promised with Dylan Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, he showed it in that one game. Now it's about consistency, and I think I've talked about it before. He strikes me as someone, because he puts together generally good at-bats, he's very professional with his approach. I think it's just one of those things, it has to slow down for him, and we don't know when that's going to be, but when it does, you're going to start seeing more of those 4-for-5 games as opposed to an 0-for-3 with two punchies. It is a little concerning because of the number of strikeouts, like we just talked about with James Wood. He was able to kind of cut down on those. We've seen a lot of strikeouts from Dylan Cruz so far in his minor league career, but I think it's just something where he's got to find it, it's got to click for him, and then once it does, I think you're going to see the Dylan Cruz that was on base every single game last year at LSU, and I think you're going to see a guy that is a future center fielder for the Nats.
Yeah, also, and this will sound like an excuse, but this is part of my, like, what I believe in my prospect DNA and my baseball DNA. Like, it's freezing cold. It's minor league ballparks. Like, bring your own energy. Nobody's there. Like, it is not a fun first week situation. Makes kind of what James Wood and a couple of the guys that have gotten off the hot starts, you know, that much more impressive. But, you know, if this was a week later into the season, it would be more telling and revealing to me. Then you're getting your feet wet. You're in Double A. I know he was there at the end of last year, but kind of learning a level of pitching for the first time, maybe above what you were used to some nights in the SEC. And it's not like you're going out and you're playing and it's 75. So as things warm up, you know, I'll be a little more intrigued here in the next couple of weeks to see what's what. Brady House, another 2-hit game. He's hitting .380 on the young year. He sure has gotten off to a good start. And while we're talking Nats prospects, congratulations to Yoandy Morales, who they drafted in the second round, the 40th pick last year. He just moved into MLB Pipeline's top 100 on their prospects list with some graduations from players getting called up and getting past their number of at-bats they're allowed before they lose prospect status. So now you've got James Wood, Dylan Cruz, Brady House, and Yo-Yo Morales all in the top 100 in baseball representing the Nationals.
Yeah, and I think this speaks to how good we felt about last year's draft class. Obviously, Dylan Cruz, but Yoandy Morales getting him in the second round, Travis Sikora, Andrew Pinckney, getting all those guys. I think it just shows how important it was. I mean, if you look back just a couple of years ago where, you know, the big news today was the Orioles, and you look and they've got Adley Rutschman, that's a number one pick. You've got Jackson Holliday, that's a number one pick. But they also have Gunnar Henderson, who was a second round pick and turned out to be a superstar. You know, maybe Yoandy Morales can be that kind of guy. Not saying he's going to be Gunnar Henderson, but you can find gems in that round, and so hopefully he can be that guy. But I think he deserves it. I mean, it's just something where he's going to have to continue to adjust, but the power's obviously there. He can play at the corner infield spots, and maybe he's been playing some more first base. Maybe that's his long-term position, but when we saw him play down in Fredericksburg, he was good at third base. I think he's got some sky-high potential, and we haven't even seen the full extent of it because we haven't seen the power fully involved yet, but once he starts getting comfortable, I think he's going to be a menace at the plate. Just his raw power, his size, I think he's going to be a masher of the baseball.
Yeah, one other guy worth noting tonight, Christian Vaquero, the 19-year-old who's at Single-A Fredericksburg, finally stateside last year. Didn't get to see him at Fredericksburg because he stayed in Cuba. He got a big signing bonus. I shouldn't say Cuba. He stayed in the DR where he was in the Dominican Summer League. Got a big signing bonus to come over from Cuba from the Nationals. As I said, he's still a teenager. They didn't want to bring him over. There would have been some weird tax things where he loses out on a bunch of the money, but long story short, now he's in Fredericksburg as a 19-year-old and hit his first home run in the States in pro ball and low A ball at Fredericksburg this evening. So I just wanted to throw that out there that Vaquero, who's a highly regarded, big-time, hyped prospect, a little bit lankier than I thought. I expected him. You know, went and saw him with you at West Palm and got a lot of time of watching him, not only on the backfields, but also playing in games, but he looks like just an athlete, like 6'3 and maybe 185 or so, going to add some muscle to the frame. But to see him, you know, homer already, he's already swiped a bag, you know, showing off some of the tools. He walks a lot, did so last year. Like, there's a lot of things I like about Vaquero, the Cuban potential outfielder of the future for the Nationals.
Yeah, he's still so young. I mean, he's not even 20 years old yet. So I'm excited to see him just in a full season. Obviously, you love to see the home run batting from the right side. He is a switch hitter. So excited to see what he can do. But last year, we saw a rookie ball and an A ball. We saw a combined 58 games. So, you know what, barely a third of the season. So hopefully, you know, getting to see him in a full year over here and growing, I'm excited to see what he can be, because he can be one of those guys where maybe he's not in the top 100 prospect list, but he has a great year and all of a sudden this guy's shooting up boards. So I'm excited to see what he can do in a full year in the Nats system stateside.
Want to shout out a listener. We told you we are not above reading your comments and shouting you out if you give us a rating and a review. So Crazy Dad Nico, thank you for doing so. After our last pod on Sunday night, he said these guys are the real deal. With so much going on in the world of baseball, it's impossible to keep up with the Nats any other way. Love being able to tune in for 20 to 30 minutes and immediately know the latest scoop on our prospects, injuries, bright stars, and it gets me and my kids excited for our hometown team. Keep it going, guys. Well, first of all, thank you very, very much. We appreciate you. And also, shout out to the young ones. Sounds like he's got some young Nats fans that he is grooming and bringing along the right way. So hopefully they're getting ready to get back out to the yard very, very soon.
Yeah, hopefully some winning baseball for the young ones so that they can experience what it's like to be cheering for a baseball team that isn't just all about potential, but it's actually about wins and losses.
For Toby Altizer and producer Darris Dameron, Grant Paulson saying so long. Thank you for listening to Bustin' Loose Baseball. Please subscribe, rate, review, do all that podcasty stuff. And as I said, please spread the word. Tell your friends. We do this every single week, couple of times a week, to get you closer to the Nats of today and the Nats of tomorrow. Until next time, enjoy Nats baseball.